Hello and welcome to the Sports Report Podcast, episode 27. I'm Billy, and Alejandro and Aiden will not be with me today as we are still obviously dealing with the coronavirus and everything that has to go with that and all the restrictions and everything. But I am here yet again this week to give you sports talk like we all need right now when all this stuff is all over the place. We need sports talk. For sports fans, that's something we need, and I'm going to bring that to you. So here we go. So over the weekend, last weekend, was the NFL draft. Now, the NFL draft, thank God that happens. Without the NFL draft happening, I mean, we have a lot of things to hold us over right now, like The Last Dance. And then we had the draft, and, you know, every now and then, like, First Take is still going, but there's not much to debate about. So there's that. But we don't have a lot. So the NFL draft was definitely a big hit. I'd say, you know, over 55 million people through the 3 days came in to watch the draft, which is the most all time. There was, like, I think maybe over 20 million or, like, 17 million or something in day one. And the original was like 14 million for most viewers. So the NFL made a lot off of this, obviously, because everybody's cooped up in their house. And everybody's interested in what the draft has to hold. And draft day one was definitely interesting. Goodell in his basement, I think, was a cool concept. A little cringeworthy were some of the things that Goodell did. But, you know, it's not... For what they're doing, there's no way that you can make that seem super professional. I mean, Goodell waving at the fans that weren't on live cam and stuff, and that was a little weird and all that. And you could tell that it was taking a toll on him because, I mean, thank God he didn't do day three because he never really – he does the first round the whole thing through, and he was fine then. But once you got to day two of the draft and it was just round two and round three – by, like, the 80th pick, man was exhausted, went to his comfy chair. And, you know, usually it's, like, players or celebrities or, like, a zoo animal that picks there. So, yeah, there was a lot of memes to come out of this draft. The draft was definitely entertaining. Bill Belichick's dog, Goodell in his chair. Just a lot of weird picks, too, with Jalen Hurts, and we'll get to that. But to start off, let's just look over some of the first-round draft picks. Now, Joe Burrow from LSU, he went number one to the Bengals. They're going to be a very good offensive team now. You know, you got John Ross, you got A.J. Green, you got Joe Mixon. They have, like, three Oklahoma running backs back there now, which is crazy. I saw that report from Schefter. They have, like, Rodney Anderson, Piron, and Mixon. So that's an interesting backfield. So you got Burrow. They also drafted T. Higgins in the second round, which was a great value pick. A lot of people had him going late first round, but he slid into the first pick of the second round, which is technically a late first. But still, really good value. The wide receivers were just off the charts, and there was a lot of ones that slid, especially, like, some surprising ones like James Prochet, who went all the way down to the seventh round, and he was, like, one of the top receiving wide receivers in the whole entire draft. He's out of SMU, so it was a smaller school, but you got to give the man props. I mean, his combine was a little down, and that's kind of what killed him a little bit. But the seventh round, I mean, come on. The Ravens got snagged there. The thing is, can Lamar throw to him? So we'll see about that. They also got Devin Duvernay out of Texas, so they got some weapons at wide receiver, which they desperately needed because Lamar was only throwing to tight ends. Then Washington went with the obvious picks. So the top three picks are the obvious ones. You got Chase Young out of Ohio State, franchise defensive player, going to change that defense immediately. Almost, you know, a pro guarantee he's going to be amazing pretty much. And there's really no doubts on how good he's going to be. In my opinion, I think Chase Young and Joe Burrow are no doubters. I think they're going to be franchise players. And Young is just, he had great sack numbers and great pressure rates and all this. So it should be good for a Washington defense and a Washington team that really needs to get up to speed. They also did good getting weapons in the late round for offense. So they didn't totally neglect that just to get Chase Young. So that was a good move by them overall. The Lions went with Jeffrey Okuda with the third pick. They didn't trade it away, which I think would have been a little beneficial. They probably could have got a good player because this draft was stacked in the first and second round. So they probably could have got a good one if they trade back a little bit. But they didn't find any trade partners. So they stick with Okuda. I mean, Okuda is, you know, he's an all right player. He's good. I think he can be a good franchise corner. Obviously, they need a replacement for Darius Slay. Besides for Darius Slay on that defense, they basically had like Justin Coleman, and that's about it. So getting Okuda in there, good pick. Now, the Giants went with Andrew Thomas. This was pretty much a no-doubter that they were going to go tackle. I saw a lot of people saying that they were going to go Isaiah Simmons, which is great because Isaiah Simmons is an animal, and he's going to be a really good player in this league. But the Giants right now, what they need is O-line help. They've always needed O-line help for like the past 10 years. So that's what they need. And they got Andrew Thomas out of Georgia. Originally, I thought they would go something like Tristan Wirfs. But when you look at it, Andrew Thomas, big guy, big hitter, he can open up holes. He's a good run blocker. You know, he had DeAndre Swift back there in Georgia. He played at Georgia, which is a great run style offense. So, you know, you have Saquon back there. You need someone who can run block, and that's what Thomas is. So I think that's an overall good pick. Maybe better than Wirfs, who knows? Wirfs slid a lot down to, I think, 13 to the Bucks, which they traded up one pick, which is really confusing because I think the 49ers were going to go D-tackle anyways because I don't think they were going to go tackle unless the Joe Staley and the retirement thing went wrong. But I think they were always kind of eyeing Trent Williams there. So who knows? But the Bucks saw him as a threat for whatever reason, and that happened. Now we go down, and then the two quarterbacks probably finally got off the board, Tua and Justin Herbert. Tua went to the Dolphins, Herbert to the Chargers. Herbert's pretty much always wanted to be a Charger, so that fits really well for them. Also, they have Tyrod, so he can start a little bit. And both of these guys aren't really going to be immediate starters from the lookout, especially Tua, because of Tua's injuries. Fitzpatrick will be good there. And that's a perfect fit, really. Miami is pretty much all in. They had a good free agency, and they're getting ready to make runs at it in the future. So they needed to get a quarterback, and they wanted to make a big splash with big potential, and they went Tua. So I think Herbert's the safer pick, but Tua going to Miami seems like a good fit. You know, it's kind of the repaying for Saban not getting Drew Brees over there when he was a head coach. So Tua to Miami. Fans are happy. And if they drafted Herbert, I think there would have been a bit of a backlash from Miami fans out there. But the front office made the right call from the fans' viewpoint, and they took a risk. And if it doesn't pay off, then you can't really blame them because you see Tua and you see his potential over Herbert's potential, and you're blown away because Tua had such a good college career. Now he did have a ton of weapons there, and he's going to have a little less weapons in Miami. But we'll see how he does. I think Tua is going to be an all-right quarterback. I don't think he's everything that they like point him out to be. I think he can be a good starter in this league for a long time. I just never think that he's going to be this amazing quarterback, and I don't think he's going to be viewed as highly as he was in like college compared to the NFL level. I don't think he's ever going to be like that top guy in the NFL. I think he can be a really good quarterback, maybe a Hall of Famer at one point, maybe, but I don't think he's ever going to be viewed as the number one guy because, you know, Burrow's always going to be there, and I think Burrow's a better quarterback. So, you know, and then Mahomes is also pretty much in the same cycle as them. There's a lot of good quarterbacks coming in right now, and there's a lot of good ones that are going to be here for the future. So you look at that, and I don't think he's ever going to be really viewed as the number one quarterback in the league ever. Ever at one point. So who knows with that. I think those were all right picks. Derek Brown to the Panthers, another good pick. I expected them to go Isaiah Simmons so that they could have two outside linebackers with Simmons and Brian Burns off the edge. But Derek Brown, good. They needed defensive tackle, so that works. And then the Cardinals luck into Isaiah Simmons. They have an outside linebacker. You know, they needed some defensive help, especially when they went offense last year a lot with Andy Isabella and Kyler Murray. So that worked out well. Jaguars were confusing here. They went C.J. Henderson, which I thought they were going to maybe go with O-lineman or something like that, but instead they go with Henderson, who's a Florida guy. I think this might be a result of, you know, not a knock on C.J. Henderson or anything, but I think this might be a result of not having a lot of time to scout, so they just went for the local guy. But they did need a corner. Henderson, I think they could have traded back for. But, you know, is what it is on that one. A lot of corners fell back in the second round, like Trayvon Diggs and Christian Fulton, who I thought were first-round values. So they could have waited, but they pulled the trigger at 9, which I thought was very questionable. But, you know, is what it is. Browns had a good draft. They got Jedrick Wills, one of the top tackles. Jets got Mekhi Becton, another tackle. Confusing thing here is that the Raiders went with Henry Ruggs instead of Judy or C.D. Lamb, who both slid to 15-17. So it's the prototypical Raiders pick, though. They like speed. They take guys who have amazing combines. Like Darius Heyward-Bey, for instance, they took him with like the 7th pick. He was probably like the 4th wide receiver on the board or something like that. This is kind of a similar pick. Henry Ruggs has a higher upside and looked better coming out coming into the draft than Heyward-Bey did back then. But it's a prototypical pick, kind of like that Al Davis type thing, although he's not there anymore, obviously. But, you know, you look at Sebastian Janikowski in the first round and things like that, they just like to puzzle you. And a lot of the picks that the Raiders did were kind of like high up. Like they went with Damon Arnett with the 20th pick, which he was like a second round value to third round value. So they're really not going for where they're picking it. They just make picks based off of who they think is they want, really. They don't care where they're picking. They just pick them. So the Raiders front office is puzzling. It works sometimes. Sometimes it fails, like Heyward-Bey. Sometimes it works, like Janikowski, although first-round pick for a kicker is like, yeah, but he put in like 20 years. So, you know, you could argue anywhere that way, but, you know. I think I liked Ruggs a ton. Ruggs was one of my favorite players coming into the draft. But at the same time, it's like, it's Henry Ruggs, and he's not the best wide receiver in this draft. I mean, you had two guys who were over him the whole entire process up to the draft. You had CeeDee and you had Jerry Jeudy. I preferred CeeDee, and CeeDee was the third wide receiver off the board. And Ruggs, even just looking at this, Ruggs played with Jerry Jeudy in the same offense on the same team at Alabama, and Jeudy had more yardage and was just the overall, that you knew he was the number one wide receiver, and you still don't take the number one over the number two. It's just weird. It's puzzling. But it's a prototypical Raiders pick, and do I blame him for being the Raiders? No, I don't. That's just what you have to expect from them. And when they picked that, I was just so surprised. I was so surprised. But then, you know, I just put it back in my head. I was like, oh, yeah, that's a Raiders pick. And I think it's going to work out for them. But, you know, what the Broncos did with Jerry Jeudy and what the Cowboys did with CeeDee Lamb, those wide receiver rooms are stacked. And the Broncos, I think, came out the winners of this draft because they just got so many offensive weapons and so many things to put around Drew Lock, who I love as a quarterback. So the Broncos, I think, came out as the winners of this draft, but we'll see what happens there. Yeah, so they went Jerry Jeudy, Denver at 15. Some other puzzling things with Atlanta with A.J. Terrell at 16. Obviously, I liked Christian Fulton and Trayvon Diggs a little more, and they went in the second round. So there you go. And Arnett at 19 to the Raiders. Some other weird picks was Jalen Reagor at 21 over Justin Jefferson, who was then picked a pick later at 22 to the Vikings. So the Eagles were probably the biggest losers of this draft. They failed very badly. They, at least for the first 2 days, they failed badly. I don't know what Howie Roseman was doing. Anyways, they picked Jalen Reagor, who is a speedy wide receiver from TCU. Didn't put up amazing numbers as a wide receiver, and he's in the Big 12 also, so the numbers are inflated. And when you can't put up great numbers in a Big 12 school, that gives me doubts immediately. I mean, Corey Coleman at Baylor, remember him? He was the Blinkentoff Award winner, I'm pretty sure, and he had like the most yardage in probably college football, and he was just amazing, and he was the number one wide receiver off the boards to the Browns. He's a Big 12 wide receiver. Everybody thought, like, okay, Brown's got a really good wide out. Here we go. This is going to be a really good pick. No, absolutely horrible. Corey Coleman he's stuck around the league, but just as a rotation guy, kind of like a Laquon Treadwell, who I believe came in out in the same draft. That's an SEC guy, so that's a little bit different. But Coleman was as a bust, a huge bust. So there's a big risk with Big 12 guys, wide receivers, and just any offensive player, because the defenses are just way worse there than you would see in any Power 5 conference. So when you look at it, it's just, it's confusing why they went Reagor. I didn't like Reagor at all. Obviously, I just listed off all the bad things about the Big 12, and he played in that, and he didn't put up good stats. He's a kick returner as well, I believe, which gives him a little bit more value to some, in some people's eyes, I guess in the Eagles' eyes. But you got Justin Jefferson there, he plays in the slot, but he can also play out wide if you want him to. He has the size to do that. And in the slot, if you want to get him in the slot where he usually plays, he's a beast. He's 6'2". He still has really good speed. His combine was nice. And he put up great numbers for the national championship team. Now, you can debate how much of that is Joe Burrow just putting it in good spots for him. But if you watch a lot of his film, you see that Jefferson just puts himself in a good position. He can be a burner at sometimes. A lot of people doubt that, but I think he can. You just have to look at the tape, really. Some of these scouts just don't know what they're talking about. I mean, Justin Jefferson, I thought, was a great pick for the Vikings and a great replacement for Stephon Diggs. I think he has the potential to be even better than Stephon Diggs. And they got a first-round pick out of that Diggs trade, so I think they won that trade at this point. I mean, the Vikings seem like they won that one. We'll see how Jefferson does, but at this point, I'd give them the win. And Reagor, bad, just bad. The Eagles don't know what they're doing. Their front office looks bad. And I can say this upcoming season's not going to be good for them. And if both those first two picks flop, the Hurts pick and the Reagor pick, then that front office is gone. They did such a good job when they won the Super Bowl back in 2017. They built a great team. They got Carson Wentz. They had Alshon Jeffrey. They had all the defensive players like Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham and Malcolm Jenkins that they had stashed away. And they just had a great team. Nelson Agholor, as much as people hate him, was still a good player at that point. And, you know, they made good selections. Derek Barnett, maybe not so much. But they made decent selections, and they were a good team. And just through this whole entire, just a few years, you're going into the draft and you're selecting freaking Jalen Reagor and Jalen Hurts with your first two picks, who aren't going to help. You need a wide receiver, so thank God you noticed that. But instead, you get Jalen Reagor, who probably would have went in the second round if you waited at all. I mean, Denzel Mims, I like Denzel Mims way better, and he's a Big 12 guy too, but at least he put up better stats than Jalen Reagor. I mean, Denzel Mims is a way better player, and he went I think in the 60s, late 60s to the Jets. And you're picking this guy at 21? What are you, Philadelphia, what are you doing? And I saw a lot of people that were mad about this pick, which I'm not even an Eagles fan. Personally, I'm on the other end of the spectrum. I'm a Patriots fan. I don't like the Eagles. And I just feel bad. I feel bad that they got Jalen Reagor and what their GM's doing right now. Tearing the team. Tearing it. Not helping at all. You need a safety, too, because Malcolm Jenkins is gone. But no. The first two picks you have to address is a wide receiver and a quarterback. Okay, you need a wide receiver. Second round, there's your safety. There's your safety. You know, Ashton Davis is still floating around if you want him from Cal. But no. But no. No. Jalen Hurts. Now let's get into this Jalen Hurts pick. Okay, now that I'm running on the Philadelphia thing, let's get into the Jalen Hurts pick. Now, Jalen Hurts. I like Jalen Hurts. I like him a lot. I like Jalen Hurts. This pick isn't bad because of Jalen Hurts. This pick is bad because of what team he's going to. And the fit. Now, the Eagles are a good organization. I like them. Okay? I like the Eagles. But Jalen Hurts is not helping you now. What you need now, you didn't make the playoffs last year. I believe, right? Yeah. No, they didn't. So you're staying here. You just need a few more players and you can get back into the conversation of possibly, you know, contending for a Super Bowl. You have Carson Wentz. He's a great quarterback. Yeah, as much as some people don't like him, Carson Wentz is a great quarterback. Okay? Carson Wentz played great in college. He played great coming into the NFL, and he's a good quarterback. Remember Wentz wagon? Where's that now? It should still be there. It should still be there. But, you know, Jalen Reagor pick might deter that one a little bit. Anyways, Jalen Hurts, great quarterback. He needs a little more time to develop. Obviously, his throwing did develop at Oklahoma against Big 12 defenses, but nonetheless, he still needs a little more time to develop. He's not an immediate starter, so that's good. But a lot of people are saying that he could be used as a Taysom Hill type of guy. First of all, if you want a Taysom Hill type of guy, Malcolm Perry was sitting right there in the 7th round, okay? He played quarterback at Navy, which was more of an option style offense, obviously. But he's playing wide receiver right now. You get a Taysom Hill type of guy out of Malcolm Perry. So why are you spending a second round pick on a utility guy? Because as long as Carson Wentz doesn't get injured, and as long as he's decent and he plays the way that he's playing, he's not good. This man just signed an extension for over $100 million, and you go and spend a second round pick on a guy who's not even going to start at quarterback for the next 4 years unless the guy gets his ACL torn out of his leg. Like, come on. Jalen Hurts is not the answer, Philadelphia. It's not the answer. If you want Taysom Hill, Malcolm Perry was right there. Lynn Bowden. Even more of an example because he could actually throw the ball at Kentucky. He was right there. If you want Taysom Hill, Lynn Bowden. Or just trade for Taysom Hill. Because the Saints they're not going to use him as the backup quarterback because they got Jameis. Okay? I mean, what? Why? 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 You could have got safety. You could have traded up and got Greedy Williams or Xavier McKinney or something. But you decided not to. And that's what it frustrates me so much. So much. Why they went without him. They went. They didn't pick a safety. They didn't pick another wide receiver. They didn't pick a utility guy. You could have waited. What I would have done if I was the Eagles GM, and this was a clear and obvious decision, you draft a safety right there or some other position of need,
and then you wait until the fifth round or fourth round or wherever Lynn Bowden went and pick him. Or you don't even pick him there. You pick another wide receiver that was pretty good. Not a utility guy, but just a pure, strict wide receiver. And then you wait all the way to the seventh round, and you draft Malcolm Perry, who was is going to be a utility guy. He's going to be a utility guy. So why are you drafting Jalen Hurts? This is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Why? I'm saying why so much, but why? It's because it's confusing. The pick made no sense. That's why everybody was so surprised, and everybody in Philadelphia was just so mad about it, because there's no reason to draft a quarterback. And if you want a good backup quarterback, because like, oh, everybody's saying Philadelphia values backup quarterback because of Nick Foles. Well, you got Sudfeld back there, and I'm pretty sure you signed him to a nice extension, didn't you? You have Nate Sudfeld. And he was a decent backup and plays good in preseason. So why are we getting another one? So throw the backup quarterback thing out the window. Throw it out the window. So he's not there to be a starting quarterback. He's not there to be the backup quarterback. What is he there to do? Taysom Hill? You could have got Taysom Hill in the seventh round. Like, come on. Come on. It's just ridiculous. Anyways, we're going to take a quick break right here, and we're going to be back in the second half. Philadelphia fans, I feel really bad for you, and I hope you can recover it. You got a good player in Jalen, but they're not going to utilize him right. I have trust in Doug Peterson, but, you know, say it with me, you know, you need a safety. So, congrats on Jalen Hurts. I hope he does well. Jalen's a good competitor, but bad fit. And that's the end of my rant. So we're going to take a quick ad break right here, and we'll be back after that. All right, welcome back. And I'm going to be done ranting about Jalen Hurts now that you've all heard that. Also, you guys just heard from Aiden in that great ad about Anchor, so go check that out if you like podcasts, where you can listen to us and on many other platforms. Anyways, let's get back into some of this NFL draft. So let's focus on my team, the Patriots. Now, the Patriots trade out of the 23rd overall pick back to 37, and I think they also acquired a third-round pick, in that, which they traded away. They made a ton of trades, nonetheless. And they selected with the 37th overall pick, Kyle Duggar, out of Lean O'Ryan, who's a safety. Lean O'Ryan, D2 school, not really an NFL factory at all, to be honest. No, not even close. Duggar is older, 24, but Ed Reed is 24, so when he came out as a rookie, obviously, now he's much older. But a lot of people were down on this pick. Now I'm here to tell you why Kyle Duggar is a good pick. Now, Kyle Duggar, big guy. So he's around 220, I think, over 6 foot. I'd hope. And he can play both safety positions, free safety and strong safety. Now, Duggar also has the ability to play that kind of nickel linebacker, which is pretty much what the Patriots needed. So they fill two needs there. They get a linebacker, which they desperately need after the departures of Van Noy and Jamie Collins. And they also get two safeties, which Chung and McCourty are both aging. So you get a safety there kind of to fill that Daron Harmon role now that Daron Harmon's in Detroit. So you have Duggar has a lot of uses, and they did fill the linebacker use, but he can check down and he can play all over the place. Kind of, you know, like Patrick Chung, if you watch Patriots games, sometimes he'll line up a little farther down, kind of like in that nickel linebacker position, and he'll kind of run around for the tackles and everything. So that's kind of what Bill looks at in Duggar. Duggar also had a really good Senior Bowl, which I think because of that, you can dismiss all those, okay, he's D2, so he sucks. No, he's a grinder, and that's what
Bill likes. I mean, Bill likes people that fight their way to the top, and he had like no offers besides for Lino Ryan, and he still got his way into the NFL through there, and he likes that he would just never gave up and stuff. And that's what Bill likes. So you can criticize the pick all you want, but once you really look into Duggar and his performance, it's good. And as I was saying, you can dismiss the D2 stuff, just saying he's D2, so he's not going to be good. You can dismiss that because you look at his Senior Bowl production. That's what you should be looking at, because at the Senior Bowl, he had a really good Senior Bowl, and he's playing against the top college prospects coming into the draft. So if he can play with that rookie class and can play well against it, that means he's probably going to be one of the better ones out of that rookie class. Not necessarily, that doesn't mean every time. It's one game, but he was good in practice, and he was good in the game, playing against guys like Justin Herbert and all those guys who were at the Senior Bowl. Pretty much every quarterback besides for like Tua, and I don't think Joe Burrow did pretty much nothing. So all the senior quarterbacks and wide receivers and all that. And the wide receiver draft class is stacked. It was stacked. So Duggar covering them did well. Impressed Bill Belichick enough, the greatest coach of all time, to go get him. So there you go on Kyle Duggar. Now, also, the Patriots got two tight ends. They got Devin Asiasi, and they got Keen out of Virginia Tech. Asiasi coming out of UCLA. Asiasi had a lot of production at UCLA. He was like the third-ranked tight end. I believe he was the second to come off the board after Cole Kmet went in the second round to the Bears. Check out our video on YouTube for his highlights, by the way. Quick plug. And anyways, Devin Asiasi, good tight end. I believe he put up at least 700 yards in his senior season, maybe somewhere around that. So he's kind of a vertical type guy. He lines up on the line, what they want and all that. So that's good. And Dalton Keene was a little bit of a surprise, a little bit of a reach. A lot of people thought he wasn't going to go that high, but he did. And Keene had good production, definitely good measurables, strong, very strong body. He can line up as a fullback as well, so you have a lot of flexibility with him. You can have a lot of different formations with Dalton Keene. So that's a nice little tight end duo. They're going back to they're looking like they want to go back to the tight end sets that they had with Gronk and the one who shall not be named. So if they can get back to that type of production, then that's amazing. But Asiasi definitely looks interesting for the future and is a guy that I didn't have on my radar coming into the draft, but looking at his numbers, very good. And I like the Patriots' day two moves, their day three moves, which was mostly offensive lineman, a kicker, and a linebacker, Kashmal Lubia from Wyoming, who I didn't even know existed. No offense to him. I'm sure he'll be okay because Patriots draft him, but I'm all in for linebackers, by the way. If they can pick a linebacker, then I'm good with that. But nonetheless, the Patriots day three was not amazing besides for their kicker who had controversy anyways, but he was a good kicker. So that was good. So that's my view on the Patriots draft. I thought their day two stuff was very good. Other than that, so. Now, another quarterback situation that I'm mad about, but not as mad as, say, I was about Jalen Hurts, as you just heard me screaming into a mic for at least 10 minutes. So, Jordan Love, right? Jordan Love. Jordan Love is quarterback from Utah State. I was really high on him going into the draft a few months ago, mid-season college football season. You know, and then his senior season turned out, so-so. And then I was kind of on him once it started getting to draft and all this. And he kind of morphed into more of that Josh Allen type, which if you listen to the podcast, you know that I hate Josh Allen so much. And I don't think he has anything more than athleticism and a strong arm. And his accuracy is just all over the place. And I don't think he'll ever be a really good quarterback. But Love, I think, has a lot of potential. He's a developmental guy, just like Hurts. Maybe a little more development because he came from Utah State and he just inconsistencies and forcing, and his reads aren't amazing. He has a lot of it's kind of like Josh Allen, not a lot of great reads, but a lot of he shows flashes
and can put the ball downfield, obviously. Arm strength, a lot of people right now like strong-armed quarterbacks, even if they can't put the ball on the mark, which Jordan Love can at times. But what I go back to on this is that, like, Jamarcus Russell, one of the biggest busts of all time, could throw, I think, like 75 yards on his knee, on one knee. So does arm strength really matter that much that you're going to pick someone just based off of arm strength, which was basically the Josh Allen pick by the Bills? So that's a red flag. Anyways, Aaron Rodgers, he's needed weapons for a while, ever since Donald Driver and James Jones and all those guys left a long time ago. Randall Cobb a few years back. Now he's needed weapons. He's had Davante Adams and Valdez Scantling, who's all right, and nothing much. He had Jimmy Graham, who was that? He's basically a shell of his former self from the Saints. We're never going to get that back. And Aaron Rodgers clamoring. I think he went on Pat McAfee's show during the draft, like a few minutes before they picked Jordan Love, saying that he would appreciate a skills player in the first round, which they haven't got. He's only thrown one touchdown to a first-round pick ever, and that was Mercedes Lewis. What other people are dismissing, though, is that, you know, Davante Adams is one of the best wide receivers in football, all that, but he doesn't have. And he's had a lot of other weapons like Greg Jennings and such that didn't come from the first. And he's had good wide receiver cores, but lately they're just not doing anything. And he had a good relationship with Matt LaFleur. And we saw that kind of flourish during the season. Like, oh, this is a great pairing. They made it to the NFC Championship. They just need a few more weapons and they can take the next step. And Matt LaFleur just throws that out the window, picks Jordan Love. And, you know, Love was sliding, so I somewhat respect the pick, but you probably could have waited maybe into the second round if you wanted that. And then they went and picked A.J. Dillon, which they already have Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams, so that really made no sense, although I love A.J. Dillon as well. So what the Packers did in the first two rounds, it didn't make sense. They pulled an Eagles, maybe even worse, to be honest. But Love is a project player, so he's going to sit behind Rodgers for two years-ish, maybe, and then Rodgers might get ousted. And, you know, he replaced Brett Favre, and that was kind of, he got Favre'd, and now Rodgers is going to get Favre'd himself. I mean, the table turned on him so bad. I mean, he's getting that right back at him. You took the Legends job. Now Jordan Love's going to take your job. And a lot of these people are saying that, no, Aaron Rodgers, you know, he's gone now. He's gone. Completely gone. Aaron Rodgers is staying this year. He's not getting traded this year, and he's probably not getting traded for the next year. Aaron Rodgers still has a little bit in the tank. He's not 40 yet. You know, Brady, he doesn't have, I don't think he has the longevity of what Brady's going to have, but he still has a little bit in the tank. He still does. He showed that last year when he made it all the way to the NFC Championship. He can still make it there. He just needed more weapons, and you gave him no weapons. They didn't even draft a wide receiver in the draft, I don't think. I don't know what they did in UDFAs, but it's UDFAs. I mean, you're going to find a good UDFA every once in a while, maybe once every two classes, but you're not going to find a world-class wide receiver generally. So what are we doing here, Packers? The Packers had one of the worst drafts as well, I'd say. You know, the Eagles and the Packers are kind of fighting for that one, two of the NFC's most iconic teams. And, you know, it's very un-Packer-like to do something like that. It doesn't seem right. And Brett Favre also came out with comments on this, and he said he spoke to Aaron Rodgers and he thinks he's going to another team to end of his career. Do I agree with this? 100% yes. I think Aaron Rodgers will end up with another team at the end of his career. Do I think he's going to do well there? Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? Do I think he'll probably do better than Jordan Love when Jordan Love takes over? Yes, because Jordan Love's going to have no weapons. So Yeah, Jordan Love is a guy that needs weapons too, because he's going to need help coming in there. And, you know, Rodgers, hopefully he's not the Ben Roethlisberger type guy that just says, I'm not mentoring anybody. Hopefully he does mentor him. You know, that would be a big help for Jordan Love, despite Love potentially going to take his job. So that would be a big help for him. But at the same time, what can you do? What can you do, Aaron Rodgers? You just got to play through it. You got to play well. Do I see the Packers going to the championship? No, not really. I think this is the 49ers conference and other teams. Seahawks just kind of making a comeback there. The Cardinals are looking really good. I think the Packers' time is really, their window's kind of closed because they didn't get any weapons. If they got some weapons, then maybe I'd leave that open, but they lost the weapons. They lost their weapons. So I don't see Packers really going anywhere. And the Jordan Love pick, it makes sense. At the same time, it doesn't, because you want to have the next guy, but Rodgers still has time in the tank, and you don't spend a first-round pick on that. You probably could have waited to the second round maybe to do that. I think he might have even been there, because I've been saying this. I've been preaching this for I don't know how many months since free agency started, that all the teams filled their quarterback needs pretty easily. And nobody really needs a quarterback right now. So if you waited in the draft, they could have fell. He could have fell. And you could have grabbed him up. You know, you still had T. Higgins on the board. You still had Mims on the board. You still had LaVisca Chenault on the board. You still had a lot of guys on the board to go after. And you just decided to say no. And then your second chance came. And then no. And your third, no. And your fourth, no. Like, you're just leaving Aaron Rodgers out there to die. You can't just tell Aaron Rodgers, you're a really good quarterback, okay? You're a great quarterback. Now, you give him a bag of trash and Devontae Adams and tell him to go out there and get a Super Bowl ring. You can't do that. You have to build a team. You can't just say you have one really good superstar and put him out there in the fire with no help besides for Devontae Adams. And just, you know, just throw him out there. You can't do that. You have to give the man weapons. And they didn't give him any. So, this is what it is right there. Joe Burrow signed a $36 million deal after he got drafted with, I believe, $25 million guaranteed. Now, this is a first overall pick contract, yes. $25 million guaranteed. I mean, he's the savior of Cincinnati at this point. He is coming in there after Palmer and Dalton failed to get them anywhere. They did good jobs, but just failed to get them really any way past that first round of the playoffs. And Burrow, he's primed to have a very, very good career in Cincinnati. I mean, Cincinnati had a bad record last year, yes, but AJ Green was out for the whole season, first of all. Dalton played bad. The coaching is subpar. And now, you look at that offense. It's a good offense. It's a good offense when you put Burrow into that. And if Burrow can perform, it's going to be good. And they have a lot of confidence in him. There was a report that came out that he had a playbook like 5 weeks before the draft or something. So, they should do all right. And I don't disagree with this contract these contract details. I'm glad that they got the deal done, and that should be good for Cincinnati. We already kind of touched over the Jameis Winston stuff, but let's go back into that. Jameis Winston, after signing, well, after going into free agency from the Bucs as the starting quarterback, he had the infamous 33 touchdown, 30 interception season, which is crazy, a 30-30. And now he was a free agent. And a lot of people were thinking that he wants a lot of money. He wanted a lot of money on the Bucks, and he ends up with a $1 million contract with about $3 million in incentives, which is what the quarterback market is now. And I'm glad Jameis finally came down to earth, and he's going to play as a backup. He's taking that Teddy Bridgewater role. That's a role that, in a good position that he needs, because, you know, Breeze is going to be out in a few in probably a year or two. And you know, you got Winston in there, and if they can fix Winston, which I think Sean Payton is as capable as anybody to get that. I mean, Sean Payton, one of the best coaches in the NFL, coached Drew Brees, and he knows what works with a quarterback. So I think he could definitely coach up Jameis Winston as into a more consistent quarterback in the NFL. And I think, you know, there's a lot of quarterbacks on the market still. You have Andy Dalton now who got cut, and you got Cam Newton. They got to realize that they got to take a backup role. There's no slots are open right now. There's the Patriots, but they're sticking with Stidham. The draft showed that. They're sticking with Stidham. And Dalton and Newton need to realize, and I think Dalton realizes this. I think Dalton's going to get in his head like Winston did, that he needs to take a $1 million contract to go be a backup somewhere. And maybe even sign back with the Bengals just with a cheaper contract to mentor Joe Burrow, which I would have liked. And I thought that would have been a great fit. So if he can go back and do that, and he takes that deal to go back there, be a backup for a year, and then wait till a job opens up, I think that would be good for him and good for Burrow and good for the Bengals organization. As for Cam Newton, he has interest in a lot of teams, but the one problem with Cam Newton is I don't think he has in his head yet that he's not going to get paid $17 million a year to go play quarterback somewhere anymore. You're going to be around $1 million, $2 million, $3 million now with Jameis. And Jameis is younger, and he's getting $1 million with $3 million in incentives. So what is a battered-up Cam Newton, who hasn't played, barely played last year, what is he going to get? And, you know, he's a big ego, and a lot of people are questioning if he can be a backup quarterback, and I think he can if he just tones it down. He has a good work ethic, and, you know, it's a Cam show whenever he rolls into somewhere. But I think he can tone that down. I think he has the possibility to tone that down. It's just, where will he get that? And I'm not so worried about the personality and being a backup. I'm just worried about him accepting that he has to take way less of a contract than he did before. He's valued way less. And it's not because of his play as a quarterback. It's just because of the market. It's what I've been saying for ages. It's because of the market. And Cam got to get that through his head like Jameis did. So we'll see how that pans out. I see Dalton getting signed before Newton. Newton's probably going to be the last really good quarterback on the board. I think Dalton's going to find a home really soon because I think, you know, he is more accepting of a backup role in probably that contract because he realizes what he did last season and all that. Cam just doesn't. So hopefully they'll figure something out. Now on to our next subject, which is Taysom Hill. Taysom Hill getting a $21 million two-year extension with about, I think there was like 15 mil guaranteed, maybe. I think there's a lot of guaranteed money in that. Now, the Saints, I don't know what you're doing. This is kind of what the Eagles did with the utilities. You could assign Taysom to a good contract, but he's probably going to be your third string quarterback. I don't see Taysom being the backup quarterback over Jameis Winston. You got Winston on a really cheap contract. Now you have Taysom as the third string on $21 million. That's a lot of money for a utility guy. So I don't necessarily know what they're doing there. He is a good utility guy, and he's a good like flex weapon type dude where you can put him in a lot of places. But I don't see why you would pay someone that much. Like, a kick returner makes barely anything if he's just a pure kick returner. You know, Taysom has a lot of versatility, and that's what the appeal is. But does he win you a ton of games? And would you be okay without him? I think they would be somewhat okay without Taysom Hill. And I think they want to keep him around. I don't think he's ever going to be the starting quarterback for the Saints. I think that's more of a Jameis thing. But I think it's a little too much money. I think he definitely did really good negotiating, getting that much. But it's just way too much for Taysom Hill. Because when you're... when your main position is quarterback, and I know Taysom's a flex, but his main position is quarterback. He came into the league as a quarterback. You want him to have at least some good snaps at quarterback before you sign him to a $10 million a year contract to be your backup. Not even your backup, your third string. Because James is going to win that backup job. We know that. We know this. And I think some people would argue with me about that, but I think it's pretty obvious that James is going to win that job. So why are you paying Taysom Hill that much money? I don't know. They're all in, so I respect that. But and they have money to throw around. But this contract might bite them. Who knows? Taysom, we'll see next year if anybody can figure him out. But Taysom's just one of those things where we don't know what the Saints are necessarily playing for him in the future. They keep throwing around things like they want him to be starting quarterback and things like that. But we'll see what happens in the future. And I'm a big fan of Taysom Hill, but I just don't understand why he got such a big contract for what he does for the team. Anyways, our next is the NFL might play on Saturday if college football is postponed. Now, they also put in a lot of changes, proposals that the NFL is considering eliminating the Pro Bowl and bye weeks for the upcoming season. And the regular season might start in mid-October, and the Super Bowl would fall on February 28th. Now, I like this because the Pro Bowl, not really needed. Bye weeks, the players might have a little problem with that, but, you know, that could be easily changed. CFB has a lot of optimism that they will play, so I don't see the NFL ever playing on Saturday. Definitely if the NFL, you know, if college football is postponed and they don't have a season, then it is wise to play on Saturday because now you have the college football audience, which is mostly watching NFL on Sundays too, but now they can have some games on Saturday and some games on Sunday. It also stretches out flights and practices and all this. It gives some more time for people, gives more entertainment per day than you just would have on Sunday. So overall, that I think that's a good move. Regular season starting in mid-October makes sense because a lot of these teams are getting held back right now. There should be some mini camps going on and some off-season workouts and things, which are happening in the virtual world, but that's not the same, obviously, as actually having a workout with your team. So it makes sense to start then. Obviously, Corona is probably going to stretch a little bit more in, although we're seeing some more things open up. And the NFL starting in October, I'm fine with that. I'm good with that. Goodell in the NFL making some good proposals here. Also, another good thing with Goodell, you know, I was never a big fan of Goodell, but Roger Goodell has been doing such a good job handling this Corona thing. They've been making good proposals. They're thinking of good ideas with all these changes that they're proposing, supposedly. And, you know, holding the NFL draft still in a virtual platform, it wasn't amazing, but nothing going to be amazing when you're put in this and you're trying to do this virtual platform thing. And I just got to give my praise to Roger Goodell. He reportedly asked to have his salary cut to $0. He's working for free through this whole entire Corona thing, and he's donating all the proceeds from his contract to the coronavirus's relief fund and all that. So, you know, Goodell makes over, I think, $200 million was like his latest contract for like 5 years. So that's a lot of money going in that he's giving up. And he definitely doesn't need the money that he's giving up. So that's good that he's giving it to something that's good. But it just shows the selflessness. And, you know, Goodell's always painted in a bad eye from Patriots fans and other NFL fans as well. But a lot of time by Patriots fans. And I'm a Pats fan, but I never thought I would say it, but, you know, Goodell is actually doing a really good job, and I respect him for this, and I've gained a lot more respect for him, and I'll never like Roger Goodell just because of what he's done to the Patriots and all this, but I think you have to give props to him. You have to give props to Roger Goodell on this. I mean, it's very selfless, and he's giving us the NFL that we want. He's giving us a good product that we need during this time, and he's giving us something that we can watch and enjoy during this pandemic. And I think that's something we all need. Because if we didn't have anything that we wanted and we were just all cooped up and all that, that would be horrible. And NFL is really the only sport that's pumping out stuff still. to keep us entertained. The NBA is not doing any games. The MLB is not doing any games or drafts or anything like that. Well, the NBA did the horse stuff, but yeah, who cares? The Last Dance obviously is on, but that's not in direct relation really to the NBA. Just putting something out, that's because ESPN wanted to put that out. So ESPN's helping us, but there it is. Andrew Berry, the GM of the Cleveland Browns, he shut down Odell Beckham Jr. rumors of him getting traded that we reported on a few weeks ago. Now, there was some problems apparently with OBJ and Baker Mayfield working together, and that's why there was some trade rumors and all that. Obviously, none of that went down. Not a lot of official reports on that, just some small guys reporting on that one. OBJ always has trade rumors around him. I don't think he'll ever escape those trade rumors until he actually finds a home where he puts up a winning record with some team and actually does really well with them. So until they find that, really, I think OBJ is just going to be haunted by these trade rumors, like all really good and I'd say not controversial, but eccentric wide receivers are. So hopefully, you know, I think Cleveland had a really good draft and I think that they can do well, but I think Andrew Berry saying this does shut down it. I don't think it's a smokescreen or a thing. I think that it is true that there's just nothing there. And we're going to take a quick break and we will be back for part 3 of Sports Report Podcast, episode 27. And we're back with some NBA. So the NBA has been, obviously all other sports league besides for the NFL has not been too busy. That's why we've had so much NFL stuff going on and talk with just me, and just because I have the most knowledge in the NFL and I enjoy talking about the NFL the most. It's my favorite sports league, as it is for many other Americans. But let's get into the NBA. So the Ball brothers, they're joining Jay-Z's agency, Roc Nation. So that includes LiAngelo, LaMelo, and Lonzo. Now Lonzo's on the Pelicans. He's getting ready for a new contract. And also we have LaMelo going into the draft, and LiAngelo, who was floating around G League rumors, but so far I think he might have got signed. I'm not sure, but you know, that's all postponed right now. And you know, I'm surprised that they really haven't been signed to a agency yet. I think they were just working with LeVar and all that and Big Baller Brand, but now that's kind of fallen apart, and we all knew that was going to fall apart at some point. We now have them going to Roc Nation, which is actually becoming a decent agency for athletes around the world. So good for the Ball brothers. Lonzo is coming up on a big contract, so you'd hope that they can get some done there, but who knows what will happen. The NBA wants May 8th for workouts. I don't think that's going to happen, as it is May 1st. A lot of leagues are reopening, but it doesn't seem like that's going to happen at all. But there is one plan that the NBA is looking at right now. They've looked at some stuff in Vegas and other things like that, but now they're looking reportedly at Disney World. Now, Disney World might seem crazy to the average viewer who hasn't really looked at it, but Disney World actually has a few arenas in there that can house NBA events. There's been some college basketball stuff in there. So it's in like some major tournaments. So it's not really out of the blue, but the one problem with this is that NBA players, obviously, you have to fly them all out to there. You have to expect them to stay. It's the same thing that the MLB would have a problem with if they pushed everybody to Arizona that Mike Trout was talking about. That people are going to miss things. They don't necessarily want to leave. They don't want to be quarantined in just one certain place that's far away from where they normally are. And that would be tough for the NBA. But I think the NBA has more motivation for that, because necessarily you're not going to have to move the whole league there, because we know they're not going to finish the regular season. And if they think they're going to finish the regular season, that's ridiculous. So this could work, because there would just be the playoff teams, really. Or you can shorten down the playoffs or something like that. I don't know. But it could work out. It could work out. If they want to get play done, they'd have to do a neutral site. So
and it se- this seems like a good spot because nobody's really going to be in there because obviously Disney World's closed. So it's a good idea, probably the best idea that they have yet, and hopefully we can see that work out to some point. The Knicks reportedly want Chris Paul. Why? Why? Okay, so Chris Paul has had a really good season with the OKC Thunder, surprisingly, where they looked like they were going to rebuild. They looked like they were going to trade him before the season. That didn't happen. Now, Chris Paul is into his mid to late 30s now. He still is playing very well, but he's going to be on the decline, and he has a lot of cap right now. So in the Knicks, they're a younger team. Why would you bring in a guy who, first of all, unless you bring in other stars, you're not going to compete with just Chris Paul. This is like a Carmelo Anthony, but a way older version, because you're not, and you don't even have an Amari Stoudemire either. You would just have Chris Paul and a bunch of nothing. You'd do bad. You can't pull off what the Thunder did. At least the Thunder have Gallinari and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and guys like that, but you don't have that with Chris Paul. That's why the Knicks are just crazy about this. Unless they can get someone out there with Chris Paul, then it just doesn't make any sense at all. Teams like the Knicks are so frustrating because they don't make moves that make sense. Like you'll have Chris Paul, Julius Randle, RJ Barrett. Who else do the Knicks have? Kevin Knox. I don't know. But they have Dennis Smith Jr. Like, they have a young team. Why would you bring in a guy who, first of all, you're going to drastically overpay for because he wants that money, and the Knicks are dumb enough to give him probably an extension off of his already huge contract. And, you know, he might be a good mentor, yes, but he's not going to get you anywhere. Right now, you want to get low draft picks, and Chris Paul might bring that up. He's not going to bring you to a playoff level, but unless you're not getting anybody else around him, then what are you doing? And if you want superstars, you want players that are actually a bit younger than Chris Paul. So, yes, it would give maybe New York a little bit of hope, but when you look at it realistically, it's not going to do anything unless you got another person around them. And I don't see anybody really around them that would want to go there at all. So the Chris Paul rumors, I don't put a lot of – I do think the Knicks are – thinking that, because the Knicks front office is not necessarily the smartest place in the world, but I don't put a ton of salt into them actually going to trade for him or sign like that. Like it won't work. Now the NBA has a new G League path, and the NCAA has put in a 2021 compensation plan to let players compensate them, get compensation for endorsements and things like that. So they're going to allow players to make money off of their image, which they haven't been before. And a lot of players are going to the G League now. There's a lot of five-star prospects that are starting to leave. And I think it's pretty evident that the NCAA, who they've been talking about this, but they're finally putting it into action. But for next year's class, they've lost a lot, and they've pretty much – they're too late on this. They're too late on this compensation plan, because the G League is starting to really become one of the things that they're getting to do. And it just doesn't really make sense to go to college to play if you're going to be a one-year guy and go straight to the NBA and be a top five pick. So for those top guys, the NCAA is going to lose them. It doesn't even matter about the compensation thing, which is good. They should do that. That will help them gain a little bit of ground back. But despite that, I don't think they're going to get much players to come back. I think a lot of people are just going to take this G League path, or if the NBA starts to let them more players just come straight out of high school, straight into the NBA instead of just the G League, then, you know, it could be really tough for the NCAA to make a rebound. And I think, you know, the NCAA is just taking a really hard hit right now because they had to cancel spring sports and all this and March Madness. And now players aren't thinking about them as the number one option anymore. If you're a top recruit in high school for basketball, you're looking straight at the G League because, first of all, you're playing better competition. Arguably, you're playing pro players. And you can get compensation, well, at least for now, you could get endorsements there, but now you can get endorsements in the NCAA possibly, which they should have been doing forever. And that's what got them into this hole. If they did this earlier and they gave endorsements to NCAA players, say in 2015, none of them would be going over to the G League right now. This opened up a huge opportunity for the G League. And the G League is pretty much taking over the NCAA basketball. And I think the overall product of NCAA basketball is going to hit a steep decline in the next couple of years because of the G League. And I think the G League is actually going to get some good viewers, you know. But I don't think they're going to beat the NCAA necessarily just because the NCAA has March Madness. But the quality of basketball, I think, is going to go down. Thankfully for them, though, they might have more four-year guys over there now because all the one-year guys will be shifting over to the G League. So, you know, there's positives and negatives from both of them. You could get exposed in the G League because it's better competition and, you know, fade out and then you pretty much lost everything. Or you can go to college. But, you know, for those surefire guys, they're going to the G League. So you're not going to have your Zion Williamsons or, say, your Karl Anthony Towns or any of those guys that played in the NCAA anymore. You're not going to have those guys because those guys will all be in the G League. And all those five stars that are decommitting and going to the G League is just horrific right now. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And I think in the next couple of years, it'll be really, really interesting to see what happens. Now on to the MLB. The MLB is eyeing the end of May to have a plan in place for playing some games. They're looking at playing not the whole season now, but more of 100 games. They want to play three divisions, one in Texas, one in Arizona, and one in Florida. And late June is being eyed as the starting date for this. Now, Texas, Arizona, and Florida. I don't know how they're going to necessarily do that just because I guess the teams in those divisions would only play each other. And they wouldn't play any other team or something to that effect. I'm not really sure on that. But, you know, you're just going to have it's going to be a mix of NL and AL teams in those divisions. It's basically spring training, but obviously spring training is not in Texas, so they'll put some teams in Texas and all that. But it's a really interesting concept. I'm not sure about the details, really, how they're going to have these records really wouldn't be to scale because you're not playing all the teams there. You're not seeing exactly how good teams are. So there could be, if they start doing playoffs, like how they're going to rearrange that and stuff like that. So I think you'd want to put them all in one location. But again, that's really tough to do. You'd want to keep them more close to home, like Mike Trout was saying. So the MLB is kind of in a pickle here. It's an interesting plan. I'd definitely like to see how they work it out. But we'll see what happens there. Now, our last thing of news, which I thought was pretty crazy when I saw this yesterday, Manny Ramirez, former slugger and outfielder for the Boston Red Sox and the LA Dodgers and all those teams that Manny Ramirez, you know, played for, one of the greatest players from the early 2000s. He's currently 47 years old, but he wants to play in Taiwan. I don't know what type of financial I'm pretty sure Manny Ramirez is pretty fine and well off, but he wants to play in Taiwan at 47. I don't know why. It's confusing. You know, there's a certain trend with the news today. It's just it's all confusing. A lot of confusing moves. I think Corona's really getting to these people, and I hope keep yourself safe. Don't make bad decisions. I'd like to see Manny Ramirez play again. You know, he probably could make it in Taiwan, but I don't know why he would do that. You know, just if you want to play baseball again, you know, maybe go to your local rec league or something. I don't know. But yeah, so that's going to be Sports Report Podcast episode 27. Thank you guys so much for listening. We couldn't do this without you guys. We just love you guys. And, you know, check us out on YouTube at Sports Report. By searching Sports Report Podcast, we put highlights and clips from the podcast, small clips from the podcast, which you can, you know, short form type stuff that you can watch.
And you can also listen to us on any podcast platform. Follow us on Twitter at SportsReportPo1, and follow us on Instagram at SportsReportPodcast. That is all of the plugs that I will be doing today. Love you guys so much, and we will see you guys next week, hopefully. Stay safe.